The Senate bill came out yesterday. You know, in its current form, the way that it is, we don't have enough support among conservatives or moderates in either chamber to really get it to the president's desk. The fundamental question continues to be, how do we make sure that we bring premiums down? How do we make sure that premiums come down substantially? And then how do we solidify the insurance markets to make sure that there's plenty of insurers that are there to provide the coverage? The Senate bill actually helped with some of the stability in that they added some additional monies for the stability fund, as well as what I would call the CSR payments, which would help with assistance to those that are on the Obamacare exchanges and getting subsidies. It fundamentally changed the way that we do the tax subsidy, in that it brought it down from 600 plus of the poverty level down to the 350% of poverty. Currently, the ACA plans at 400% of poverty. That reduction, just to be honest, is probably doesn't affect a great number of people in terms of that threshold. Without getting too wonky, at 317% of the poverty level, most people are getting covered through employer and employer-based health plans. And so while that may make sense, 350 versus 400 not affecting a large population, one of the recommendations that we have put forward is to look at the subsidies perhaps kicking out at 300% of poverty, but then allowing for tax deductions for everyone to be able to pay for insurance in a tax deductible manner above that line, as well as expanding HSAs to allow for being able to buy insurance premiums out of a health savings account. Again, trying to make sure that the tax burden, whether you're at 350% of poverty or below or above that, is as affordable as it possibly can. Additionally, there are a number of us that believe that there should be an amendment in there that allows for people to purchase Obamacare plans, but alongside of that, purchase other non-compliant, non-ACA plans that would more accurately reflect the risk that they have. And so in doing that, for example, someone in their 50s perhaps would have more coverage on certain types of illnesses and less on others. And having that flexibility for a healthcare provider, we think, is incredibly important, as well as, and I say healthcare provider, more accurately, insurance providers. If we can do that, we believe that it'll have the greatest effect on rates and allowing people to make sure that it's affordable. Some people have asked a whole lot about the Medicaid portion of the bill coming out of the Senate. Indeed, since we're not a Medicaid expansion state, I see the impact on North Carolina as not being great in that realm. The one thing I want to make sure of is that since we're providing a longer glide path for the Medicaid expansion portion of that, is that North Carolina gets their fair share in terms of compensation to go for Governor Cooper and the legislature to be able to deploy for making a fiscally responsible decision, you know, when North Carolina did not expand Medicaid. That being said, I'm still optimistic that we can improve the bill. and get consensus among moderates and conservatives, both in the Senate and the House, and ultimately get it to President Trump for his signature. So with that opening, I'm going to run real quick to budget. The biggest budget concerns right now have to do with increasing the amount of money for defense and non-defense discretionary dollars. It is very apparent that the president's budget will not be the numbers or the levels that gain enough support in the House or the Senate in order to pass. And so those numbers, as we look at them right now, probably keep the agreement right now would be to increase defense spending by probably closer to $75 billion, keep non-defense discretionary at very close to current levels that we're at, and that seems to be where most of the consensus is building in the House. There is not an agreement. There is a real desire that if we're going to do tax reform, that we have other mandatory spending cuts alongside of that. And so the next week, in fact, next week becomes a critical week for both the budget and for those final numbers. There's growing pressure on a number of us to break sequester, primarily for military. And in doing that, it would be you know, a monumental vote that probably we haven't seen in the House or Senate if we did that in, you know, at least the last three Congresses. You know, we're not there. It's a work in progress on the it's a work in progress in terms of the budget. But I can tell you that we're probably closer along on the healthcare debate than we are the budget debate right now, just because we've kind of we're in three different camps within the House. You have fiscal hawks, you have defense hawks, and then you have those that we would say are probably more moderate in their spending habits, wanting to increase non-defense discretionary, that would be more apt to side with Democrats in terms of non-defense spending levels. And so it's trying to bring those three groups together to come up with an agreement. So with that being said, hopefully that gives a little fodder for the fire, and I will be glad to answer specific questions as you have it, so for clarification, and thank you all for joining the call.
Thanks, sir. Folks, if you have a question, if you just want to say your name, what outlet you're with, and we can go from there, and we'll take as many as we can get to.
Congressman Meadows, Jeremy Lowe, Blue Ridge Public Radio. In a meeting with senators, President Trump called the health care law passed by the House mean. Did you know that was how the president felt about the bill when it was passed?
Well, I think what he's responding to, you know, you can characterize the bill in a number of different ways. And we've talked about this. Actually, I spoke to the president 2 days ago about this very thing. And what he's talking about is he's wanting to make sure that we not only handle pre-existing conditions, but that we fund it in such a way that doesn't give people anxiety. And so in doing that, I support him fully in that. It's more comments that were made to him by Republicans and Democrats alike, that they want to make sure that we adequately fund it. I've been on record to making sure that our pre-existing high-risk pools are adequately funded. I'm a numbers guy, and so as I looked at what came out of the House, I felt like we could increase that to make sure that there is no anxiety in terms of people that have pre-existing condition. That's been my commitment from day one. It remains my commitment. So I don't see it as a characterization as much as a real push to get the Senate to increase some of the dollars on these critical areas, which their bill reflects.
Are you concerned he would say that? I mean, he's obviously one of the big proponents of the bill.
No, I'm not concerned with any characterization. You can get characterizations each and every day. I think I'm probably more concerned with getting it right. I agree with him that we've got to get it right, and those, from his standpoint, means that we have to make sure that it's adequately funded, and so that's what we're going to do. That's what we plan to do in the House, and in my conversations with him and other administration officials. I've stressed the willingness to work hand in glove to get that done.
Senator Meadows, this is Jessica Webb with Smoky Mountain Times.
Yeah, Jessica.
You say that ensuring people with pre-existing conditions can continue to be covered, that's a high priority for you. If that's the case, why allow loopholes for states to bypass some of those protections?
Well, it doesn't really. The pre-existing condition, and thanks for the question, Jessica. I mean, the pre-existing condition provision, both in the House bill and in the Senate bill, was never bypassed. It didn't allow for coverage to be denied based on pre-existing. I mean, that was widely reported, but that was never the case. That pre-existing condition under the ACA, that section, and I'm going back on memory, but I think it's Section 2715 was remained in there in the House bill. It remains in there still, and so pre-existing conditions have to be covered. Now, the real question became is well, were premiums going to get to the point where, yes, you had to cover it, an insurance provider had to cover it, but would premiums go so high that that by default – they would not be covered, and that's where the Palmer-Schweikert Amendment, which is a House Freedom Caucus amendment, came in place. We offered that. It got adopted. We need to make sure that that's properly funded, and that's kind of what I talked about in our opening remarks. If that is properly refunded, if I come and I have a pre-existing condition and I'm applying for insurance, not only do I have to be covered, but I get covered, and if you're healthy, Jessica, and you go to the same insurance provider, I get the same rate that you do. I just get it handled differently by an invisible high-risk pool that's administered by the state and properly funded so that my net premium is no different than yours. So it's important that we share that, because a whole lot was written on the pre-existing condition of what may have happened or would happen. And as long as those high-risk pools are properly funded, which I'm committed to make sure happens in order to get the waiver that you're talking about, then what happens is your rate as a healthy adult and my rate with a pre-existing condition is exactly the same, net-net is exactly the same, and yet part of my premium would be getting picked up with a high-risk pool. But thanks for the question.
Hey, it's Derek from the Times News. Just curious what changes you'd like to see to get your support behind this bill.
Really, probably the biggest thing that I would like to see in terms of amendments is, and it's 142 pages that came out from the Senate. I've read it 1.5 times. I'm trying to read it for comprehension right now to make sure that every dot and tittle I understand. But in doing that, the biggest areas that I think that we need to address is to have flexibility for consumers where they don't have to buy just one of four plans, that they can buy one of 20 plans, and that insurance providers are allowed by law to provide those types of plans and still qualify for the subsidies that are offered by the federal government. That's the one area that's an amendment that I think would be critical to offer. The second part of that is to expand the ability of HSAs to allow more people to buy those types of coverage. For example, I'm on Obamacare, and I pay around $19,000 before I get any benefit in terms of reimbursement for health care coverage. So it's my premiums plus a $7,500 deductible. So my out-of-pocket is $19,000. I would be better off to put $19,000 in a health savings account and buy out of that a catastrophic plan. So if I got cancer or some dreaded disease that would kick in, but that my normal day-to-day doctor stuff comes out of an HSA. Right now, we're prohibited from doing that under the Affordable Care Act. I think I can even get Democrats on board with that. They see the reasonableness of giving consumers more choice on both of those items. I think if we got that, that would go a long ways to driving down premiums and making sure that we get something that's better for all consumers. Thanks, Derek.
Congressman Corey Ballancourt, Smoky Mountain News. I'd like to move over to the budget briefly. When President Trump's budget was released, there was a lot of negative reaction in your district to the defunding of the Appalachian Regional Commission. That's something that you had expressed some support for, and so I'm just wondering where we're at in that whole process.
Yeah, I still support the ARC or the Appalachian Regional Commission. I've been consistent there. Morgan Griffith, who represents Virginia just above the line there, we've had discussions about that. Some of the regional commissions get a bad lick for how they deploy dollars, but the ARC and what it does for economic growth in my district is something that is important. I see any final budget actually including support for that. I can tell you the budgets that we are discussing here on the House actually would support that as well. And so, you know, I've reached out to a couple of people that let them know that my support for that continues to be unyielding and still supportive. But I appreciate you bringing it up because there's a whole lot. I mean, there were other community block grants that would affect Meals on Wheels. I'm a big supporter of Meals on Wheels, and so that's not something that I could support either. And so sometimes when we look at the budget numbers that come out from OMB on the president's behalf, there's always things in there that they get lined item that you know, even under President Obama, there were things that he funded that I agreed with and things that he didn't, and this president is no different.
Congressman Mark Barrett with the Asheville Citizen Times.
Hey, Mark.
You talked to, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. You talked about Medicaid a little bit earlier and said the impact on North Carolina wouldn't be that great. Critics of what's been discussed in both the House and the Senate are very concerned about the switch from basically giving for Medicaid paying for whatever medical procedures a covered person may need to giving the states a fixed amount of money for each person. And the concern apparently is that'll squeeze the states and make the program harder for them to afford. I gather, what's your take on that? Is that a big concern or not?
Well, I mean, it's a big concern any time that we look at Medicaid dollars. So here's what I would prefer to see is greater flexibility for every governor and every state to deploy those Medicaid dollars in a less prescriptive manner. You know, there are those who say, well, we'll do it on a per capita basis. The fact of the matter is Medicaid today, even Bernie Sanders would agree with this, Medicaid today is broken. And so you go to Mission Hospital in Asheville, you get a Medicaid reimbursement. It doesn't really reimburse the cost. It doesn't, you know, and so what we've done is we somehow think that Medicaid is working the way that it is, but even Bernie Sanders and Mark Meadows can agree on this particular item is that Medicaid, the way that it currently is, doesn't work. now. That being said, is, you know, whether you block granite or whether you have a per capita allotment, the real key is going to be allowing those dollars to be deployed by a governor and a legislature to meet the needs. And it has a big impact in my district because of the rural nature and the demographics that we have. But the trajectory that we're on, Mark, is one that is not sustainable for the health care provider. I mean, they continue to get reimbursed, but they're getting reimbursed at less and less of a cost. And so fundamentally, we have to look at changing the way that we do that. Does this bill go far enough to reform it to give that flexibility? No. Does the existing structure give enough flexibility? The answer is no there as well. So I think there's more work to be done, but it's probably a broader Medicaid reform package that we're going to have to look at outside of a ACA repeal and replacement measure.
Folks, it's Ben Williamson. We've got time for maybe one or two more, and then I've got to run him off to a meeting. So we'll maybe take one or two more if anybody has any other questions.
Yeah, Congressman Meadows, Jeremy Loeb with Blue Ridge Public Radio again. There's been a lot of criticism about the process with which this bill has been presented. Do you have any concerns about the timeline, the speed with which the bill is being brought forth?
Well, I don't have a problem with the speed of which it's being brought forth. I mean, the Senate was watching our debate. In fact, I was having a number of conversations with my Senate colleagues while we were debating it in the House. And so, you know, we've talked about repeal and replacement for 7 years as Republicans. Where I do have a concern is trying to make sure that the legislation does what the fundamental top priority has to be. Does it lower premiums and stop forcing the hardworking American taxpayer from having to make a decision between mortgage payments or putting food on the table and their insurance premiums? And unless we address that, we will have failed. And so I say, you know, everybody will say, you know, there's a group out there that says we're going too slow. There's a group out there that's saying we're going too fast. Normally that divides up in whether they love the Affordable Care Act or they detest it. And here's what most people can agree on, whether they're Democrat, Republican, or unaffiliated. Insurance premiums have continued to skyrocket. We need to do something about that. We also need to do something to make sure that pre-existing conditions are protected and make sure that they're covered. If we can do those two things, in fact, we will do those two things in any bill that reaches the president's desk that has my support. We will do those two things. The normal criticism, just to be frank, is that Congress doesn't get enough done, and that's why I've said that we should stay in August and get, whether it's tax reform, whether it's infrastructure bill, whether we get things, and that we go home on weekends to do our town halls and the like. But normally the criticism most of your readers and listeners would have is that we don't get enough done, not that we're moving with too much speed. So I find that argument to be one that is probably based on a different agenda than a process-driven one.
Sorry to take your time again, but do you have any concerns about the secrecy with which the bill was presented?
You know, that's a Senate deal. Obviously, I'm for open process and transparency and believe that we need to do that. I think the more open and transparent the deliberation is, the better the product. But I'm not a senator, and I'm not there going to critique Senator McConnell. I'll leave that up for Richard Burr or Tom Tillis to do that.
We'll take one more if somebody else has a question.
Congressman, I don't want to step on anybody else's question, but I've been wondering how much of a setback is it for your efforts to get the remaining funds for the settlement of the North Shore issue regarding Swain County. How much of a setback is it that President Trump included no funds in his budget for that?
Well, I can tell you that from a budget standpoint, when they were working on that, this was not something that was probably made it even into the top 50 in terms of priorities, in terms of a budget. Mm-hmm. You know, they were working on a very short time frame. Without preempting anything, I can tell you that I've had probably four very, very substantial and encouraging conversations in the last 30 to 45 days as it relates to North Shore funding. And I'm optimistic that that particular issue that actually I worked on with Congressman Schuller, it was his last thing and my first thing, that the efforts of both of us will provide some real fruit in the near term.